Calls are growing for the CEO of JEA to step down. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. And just ahead this morning, we speak with Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci about JEA and other issues, plus your calls. Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, Nick Foles gets benched and Gardner Minshew takes the field. Drama at the Jaguars game. Culpepper has the highlights. But first this morning, Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci is publicly urging JEA CEO Aaron Zahn to resign. This as the debate intensifies over a possible sale of the city-owned utility. Some have also called for a grand jury investigation into the controversy swirling around JEA. With more on that and some other important news and notes, we welcome City Councilman at Large Matt Carlucci back to Studio 5. Councilman, thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me this morning. It's cold outside. Feels good.
It is. It's definitely that holiday feel in the air. Yes, it is. And it's also a good day to get back into your workday routine by calling us up. What are your thoughts about the controversy centered around JEA and calls for the CEO to step down? 549-2937. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Our Facebook page is open as well. Councilman Carlucci, the other day, you issued a public statement saying that JEA CEO Aaron Zahn needs to leave the utility and find another use for his skill set. What prompted you to do that?
Well, I have been thinking about this for, a couple of weeks and just finally decided to pull the plug after, say what I've been thinking for a long time. But after the performance bonus plan that they came out with, a performance unit plan, and the lack of transparency, the Kyle Billy sends questions over to Kyle Billy, the city council auditor, sends questions over to the JEA. They don't get answered. The questions don't get answered. Lack of transparency. It's just time for the JEA board, I think, to call for his resignation. I don't like doing that. Personally, I think he's a nice gentleman, but I don't think this is where he needs to be. I think that we need to keep this utility public. It does not need to be privatized. There's too many good reasons to keep it public. The headwinds are not so strong that they can't be overcome, okay? And so with that said, I think Aaron Zahn has been trying to push towards privatization from the beginning. So I just called for it. And there's a certain liberating effect when you say what you really believe. Because I'm going to tell you, it may be calling for his job, and I don't like that, but there's going to be a lot of other jobs lost if privatization happens. So we're talking about jobs here. We're talking about people. We're talking about – this is all about Jacksonville to me. It's all about what's best for Jacksonville. And so I just sat down the other night, and I said, I'm just going to send this out, and I did. And the response has been incredible. Of people I've never met, emailing me, calling me, texting me, and so on and so forth. And this is people from the business community that would surprise you. I mean, some big hitters in the business community. They don't like what's happening. They know the value. You know, we seem to be wanting to privatize this so we can get $3 billion or $4 billion. But to me, what we ought to be looking at is what is the value of JEA to our city, okay? There's a value to that. One of those values was the $52 to $53 million that they invested in bringing up the water and sewer and utilities in what used to be Cecil Field and turning it into Cecil Commerce Center. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and that list can go on and on. So I'm for keeping it public. If we're for keeping it public, we ought to do a nationwide search for the very best executive CEO we can find with experience to run the Jacksonville or the JEA.
Your call for Zahn to resign was echoed by former Jacksonville Mayor Jake Godbold. He took out a full-page ad in the Times Union saying much the same and appeared before the city council urging them to pull the plug on this sale. You mentioned business leaders. The former CEO of CSX, Mike Ward, urged your body, the Jacksonville City Council, to issue something of a no-confidence vote in JEA's leadership.
Yes.
There was a protest at City Hall by the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville asking that this process be stopped. There have been calls among some local voices, one among them, former City General Counsel Rick Mullaney, saying there needs to be a grand jury investigation into some of the controversy at JEA.
I found that fascinating because Rick is very smart. He wouldn't just say that if he didn't mean it. And by the way, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't really mean it.
And let me ask you, with regard to his call for that, it had to do with a plan the utility has now scrapped, where top executives and rank and file employees at JEA would stand to reap hefty bonuses in the event of a sale. There was so much controversy when this became public that the utility backed off from that. Was that a bonus plan, which was so controversial, was that what prompted you ultimately to take this position?
That was the straw that broke the camel's back. And the fact that they wouldn't answer Kyle Billy's questions that he sent over in letter or email form. I just think that enough is enough. This whole issue has lost credibility. I think the citizens are fatigued over it. It's holding us up. It's keeping us from moving forward on other important issues. I do respect the task force that Michael Borland is leading. I know he's putting his heart and soul in it.
But, that's your colleague on the city council.
My colleague on the council. Yeah. And I will continue to support his task force and to make an appearance. But I'm just ready to say what I think. And that's what I did.
Okay. The chairman of JEA's board of directors, April Green, issued a statement in response to your call for her CEO to resign. Ms. Green says the JEA board has their full faith and support in Aaron Zahn to take JEA through a 10-year strategic planning process. She says, we have the duty and responsibility to work collaboratively on the most pressing and complicated issues facing our city. We simply cannot do things the way we have always done them. In other words, she's saying that people need to be open to this idea of privatization because the argument JEA has been making is that continuing as we are is unsustainable. And what is your response to that?
Well, it's the first time I've heard of a 10-year plan. What I have heard from Ms. Green, and this is kind of difficult because she's married to a very good friend of mine, Eric Green, at the Port Authority. And I've known Eric, and I love him. He's a wonderful man. So it's difficult in that respect, but what I don't like is when I read too much of the sky is falling. The JEA bill, she has a message to the ratepayer in their bills, and it basically says that the JEA is in a death spiral, is fixing over the financial cliff, and the only way out is through a non-governmental entity. But yet, like a day before that, Aaron Zahn said, or a few days before that, Aaron Zahn said something, this is almost an exact quote, but it may not be exact, but he said the JEA financial and operating performance is better than it ever has been. So I'm thinking, okay, if we're going over the cliff, who would want to buy that?
But then again, it appears nine different interested suitors that they're talking to.
But if the JEA is financially operating better than it ever has been before, and they're going to put out a performance unit plan that could turn into hundreds of millions of dollars payout at the ratepayer's expense. I mean, if we're doing that great, why would we sell it? So there are challenges they have. You're talking to somebody who had challenges in my business, and I had to use what capital I had to diversify the way that we do business with my business, and I can tell you, the builders had to do the same thing. The realtors, lots of people out there through the recession had to change the way they did business. So I get that. So I kind of felt his pain from the beginning. I wanted to work with him, but dadgum, he he just seems bent on privatization,
now,
and that's it.
We'll be welcoming JEA VP, Spokeswoman, Chief Customer Officer Carrie Stewart to this program tomorrow. And she has several times tried to point out that privatization is just one of several options they're considering. What about that?
Well, first of all, I have the greatest respect for Carrie Stewart. Always have. She's a tremendous public servant. She's doing her job. But I'm looking here at something, and I heard what the mayor had to say when he visited Michael Borland's task force. But Curry backs JEA effort to sell utility, Jacksonville Record and Observer. So, and he said as much to the city. So, you know what? Hey, I give the mayor credit. He finally came out and said, I'm for privatization. Good for him. That's his opinion. It just happens to be that my opinion is different.
Let's go to some calls now for City Councilman Matt Carlucci on his call for the CEO of JEA to resign as controversy around the push to privatize the utility ramps up in this city. Where are you on this? It's 549-2937. George is along I-295. Hey, George. Hope you had a good holiday. Go ahead.
I did. Thank you for taking my call, and I want to thank Councilman Carlucci for doing what every other elected official who is supposed to represent the citizens of Jacksonville should have done 6 months ago when this really started festering to the surface. The JEA is a prize for the city of Jacksonville and its citizens. We enjoy amongst the lowest electric rates in the state, and we have control over our utility. We're not being leveraged or held hostage by a corporation that is for private or for public or for private profit. So, again, I take my hat off to you, sir, and I greatly appreciate your efforts because somebody should have done this 6 months ago.
All right, George,
you nailed
thank you for
it.
The call.
And by the way, while you're out there, please drive careful. You're probably on Bluetooth, I'm sure, but drive careful, my friend.
So. That's right. We always tell people, people like to call as they're out on the roads. Yeah, good advice. Be careful. Use the hands free.
Well, thank you very much.
You're really not supposed to do it at all, but we're not going to tell you not to do that.
He's on Bluetooth, I'm sure.
Now, what about his point? He's saying that your colleagues should join you on the city council. Are they? Are the votes there to call for a no confidence vote, or are you alone in this?
Well, let me just say, when I sent this letter out, I said that I was one of 19 Jacksonville City Council members. It is my personal opinion. So I don't know where my other council members may fall. But I was speaking for myself, and I felt it was time that I spoke what I have thought for a long time and put it behind me. And I hope that I get at least 9 other council members to join me. We have to decide in this city.
And if they do, what will you do then? If you get 10 votes, will you?
It'd be better to have 13, but you could have a call of no confidence. And if you did that, that would send a powerful message to the JEA board. We've got to decide, do we want to be private or do we want to be public utility? I think that's the big elephant in the room. Do we want to be public or private? I prefer public. Local control. And by the way, nowhere is local control more important than after a hurricane, taken from somebody that's been in the insurance business and handled hundreds and hundreds of hurricane claims and other storm claims as well.
Theo is in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Theo.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that I find it infuriating that the board is literally propagandizing this entire process, and I think it's been... I think it's been just falsely portrayed from the beginning. It's ludicrous. It's unbelievable that JEA would be described as being in a death spiral when, in fact, the private industry companies that do this are all lining up, stumbling all over themselves to buy it from us. If it was in a death spiral, the private industries would not be so eager to have a chunk of it. And the way that the board has gone about, like by sending out literally written material, saying the sky is falling and providing a worst case scenario for remaining private, while contrasting it to a best case scenario of projections of how golden the streets would be paved, you know, if we went private, it's just completely ludicrous. And I am furious with the mayor, who for months told us he didn't have a dog in the hunt. And I'm furious with the board. And I thank you very much, Councilman Carlucci, for standing up. And I hope that you will quit saying you're just one on the board and gather your forces around you and save the JEA from this. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Theo, and duly noted.
And he mentioned mailers that JEA sent out, yes, to ratepayers. Do you have a position on that?
Yeah, I don't think they should be. I mean, the mailers are definitely a push towards privatization, in my opinion. You can read them for yourself. My wife found it because she pays the bills at the house. And she said, "Have you seen this?" And I looked at it and read it, and I became infuriated. I said, "This is being paid for with ratepayers' money to push for privatization," and that's what I keep saying is we've got to decide what we want to be, public or private.
The polls show that the public wants to keep this utility public, at least right now. That's what the polls show.
Yes.
That could change.
That could change.
What if JEA sent out rebate checks to every ratepayer in the event of a sale? That might change some minds. They might be more inclined to vote to privatize.
It might be inclined to change some minds. I will tell you something that's interesting, though. At my insurance office, I still get a lot of people that just drive by my office to pay with cash or checks. And many of them are, you know, struggling to, you know, make ends meet. And I ask them about that. And they say, "I don't want that. I want the JEA to stay like it is. I'm not going to fall for some type of rebate." They don't like it. A lot of people I talk, I've never found anybody that's liked the idea yet.
Larry on the west side. Hello, Larry. Good morning.
Yes, good morning to everybody.
Morning.
How you doing? I'm just calling in to side with Mr. Carlucci. It is Carlucci. Is that how to pronounce your name, Carlucci?
You're doing good, Carlucci. The CCI is like a CHI. Carlucci is Italian.
Okay, right.
Well, thank you.
Big ups to you, sir. Big ups to you, and kudos to you for standing up. And I can tell you right now, a good 70% of us out here, and I'm very passionate about this, we don't want to sell that utility. We don't want, you know, no private investors. We don't have to. It's just when you look across America, it's just, you know, it's been a lot of those utilities that went private just didn't work out too good. And so just big ups to you. I mean, man, you know, for standing up. And then I can tell you right now, quickly here, the council members that doesn't stand with you, man, I tell you, I hope they be primaried out.
Larry, thanks for that.
Larry, thanks a lot. Let me mention one thing Larry said that I think is interesting, and it dovetails with something that's going on in our country. The trend in our state and our country is cities are wanting municipal-owned utilities, and if they sold them, they're trying to buy them back. If we ever sell JEA, it's gone, and if we have to buy it back, oh my gosh, Lord only knows how much it would cost us.
Fred in Green Cove. Hi, Fred. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I just wanted to give a little bit of background on how utilities work. If you'll, I don't have it available in front of me, but if you'll check out a Forbes magazine article on Florida Power and Light and what the shareholders had to do to get back $29 million in bonuses that they gave themselves when they were going to merge with Duke, and they didn't merge, and they still gave themselves a $29 million bonus. And the article is about how shareholders never get their money back. They sued and sued, and I think they got a part of it back. But that's how these large utilities work. There's a small group on the top that just milk it for whatever it's worth. Florida Power & Light, again, bought an insurance company, and it failed. And they sold it at a loss. And the CEO gave himself a 29% pay increase. Anyway, just check out that Forbes magazine. This is no...
Thank you, Fred.
Anyway. I will do that.
And certainly, these are some of the arguments we've been hearing against privatization. Mm-hmm. Let me play devil's advocate with you for a moment before we go to some more calls. The arguments for it. As you pointed out, the city could net anywhere from $3 to $7 billion. That would, according to the mayor, make Jacksonville, at least for the time being, a debt-free city. There'd be a huge pot of money to do a whole slew of projects.
It wouldn't pay off our pension debt. So we wouldn't be debt-free.
So the mayor's saying that's a lie? That's not true?
No, I think he's talking about some of our outstanding bonds. And if I'm wrong, I'll be the first to come back on your show and admit it. But I have talked to the council auditor.
He said
that it would not be enough to pay off our pension liability.
Is Mayor Curry being misleading? Because that's the argument he's made.
I haven't heard everything that he has said. I'm going to be careful because I'm trying to base everything I am talking about on what I've heard and what I've read. I've heard him say that, but I don't know if he means just the number of bond issues that we have out there that are outstanding. Better Jacksonville plan would be paid off. I think that's what he's mostly talking about. But when you talk about our entire debt, you got to include the pension, the pension unfunded liability that we're still trying to pay off with a half-cent sales tax. So I guess what he would be saying, if we pay off Better Jacksonville earlier, then that half-cent could go towards paying off the pension unfunded pension liability quicker.
Lots of emails, tweets, Facebook comments as we speak with Matt Carlucci about JEA. Here's an email from Liz. The privatization of public entities doesn't always lead to better outcomes. Look at the privatization of prisons and for-profit hospitals. When profit alone drives business decisions, the citizens lose. I moved here 6 years ago and was struck by the wonderful service we get from JEA. Don't sell, she says. On Facebook, lots of comments. Here's one from a listener, and this echoes a lot of tweets we're getting too. Rich writes on Facebook, the Curry administration seems to be the most corrupt since Boss Tweed and the Tammany Hall days. Why is there no attorney general investigation yet? This echoes the calls that we mentioned a few minutes ago, councilman from the city's former lead attorney, Rick Mullaney, saying he believes there needs to be a grand jury investigation into JEA. As yet, we have not heard of such an investigation.
Well, that's strong coming from Rick Mullaney because I know Rick. He's a good friend. I worked with Rick for a long time. He would not say something like that unless he really meant it. And he might make a good guest on your show one day regarding that.
And by the way, he hosts a show here on our airwaves called Policy Matters.
Oh, that's right. He does.
But what about that? Are you going to join in his call for a grand jury investigation?
I'm not going to say I'm going to join for that call. I just heard about it the other day. I just want to see us put this thing to rest and commit ourselves to a public utility and get the very best CEO that we can find in a nationwide search. Jacksonville deserves the very best, and we have it with the JEA. We need the very best CEO of a public utility we can find nationwide.
Sally in Avondale. Sally, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, I would like Mr. Carlucci to address the issue of what JEA's point is that because it's a municipally owned utility, there's restrictions with the legislature that don't allow JEA to make the changes to their type of fuel and things like that. So that's the issue we need to address.
Okay, I'm happy to
and
talk.
And I wish he would address that before he decides whether or not he wants to have a public utility. I mean, can we get those changes made? That's what I'd like to know.
Okay.
Thanks, Sally.
That's a great question, and I'm prepared to answer that. I've done a lot of homework on just how challenging it is to move into different markets. First of all, we already have three markets that we could be expanding, we could be capitalizing. One is chilled market. We have a chilled water market that's already there. We have a solar farm that we just bought out on the north side it's not been developed into a solar farm yet, but the land's been cleared. We can do that. We can go ahead with natural gas, dark fiber, which is fiber optics. We have a market there. I have spoken to the CEO of the Orlando Public Utilities Commission, and I asked him these very same questions that this lady asked. He said, you know, they're not that hard to get around, and you just have to work at it, and there are markets out there that you can take advantage of without having to worry about going around those, without delving into the state constitution.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with City Councilman Matt Carlucci about his call for the leadership of JEA to step down. This is in response to intensifying controversy, a series of controversies and revelations that have come out in recent weeks over the potential sale of the utility. Lots of calls and tweets. Here's a tweet from a listener. The citizens of Jax should make it clear to their council members a vote to sell JEA will cost them their seat, plain and simple. I'm sure your city council representatives are hearing from the public on this, both pro and con. I'm going to take a few more calls on this, and then we're going to move on and talk about another big issue for the city, resiliency. Yes. Let's go to Jason in San Marco. Hi, Jason. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. You know, you've done a fantastic job of vetting this question over the last month, and I haven't heard one person call in who's in support of selling JEA. I may have missed it. That's a possibility, but Mr. Carlucci has the people's back. I mean, we've got his back is what I want to say, and that I just don't understand it. We also need an investigation into this crazy payout that was going to be happening to these executive board members that kind of has seemingly been squashed. But boy, that was a real interesting proposition where they were potentially going to make millions of dollars, I believe, if this thing did sell. So he's got the people behind him. The people do not want to sell JEA. And I'm sorry if Mr. Curry, the mayor, is upset about that, but he's going to have to consult with his constituents and just, you know, do what they're asking, which is to leave it in a publicly owned utility and stop the privatization. I believe there was Mr. Zahn. I don't think he was the preferred candidate of anyone who was making the choice, and he kind of got rammed down our throat. So I think he's making a good point there, too. And once again, I really appreciate you letting us call in and put forth our opinions.
All right, Jason, thank you. Have you spoken to Mayor Curry privately at all about this and where you are in this and tried to have a discussion with him?
Maybe when I first got elected. I've only seen Mayor Curry at City Hall maybe three times. I will say he has worked to find some common ground on things we can work on, and public housing improvements is one of them. And listen, you know, when I agree with the mayor, I'm going to lock arms with him. I'm going to be his best friend. But if I disagree with him, that's what the other side of the fourth floor of City Hall is for. We're the checks and balances. And listen, I've been doing this a long time, and this is politically popular now, perhaps. It could be politically unpopular in a year. Politics is tricky. So that's why I have learned over the long haul to do what you think is right, stick to it, and you'll be comfortable in your skin and you'll sleep well at night.
This is what, your fourth term?
Fourth term.
Fourth term,
yes,
on
ma'am.
City Council. You've held office three separate times. Do you plan to seek another office at the end of this term, as some have been asking me on social media? Are you taking these positions, which are quite public and high profile, and definitely in the hot heat of the moment issues for Jacksonville, are you taking these positions to gear up for a run for mayor yourself?
No. I am at the point in my life where I have a chance and a platform to do what I think is best for this city, for my children and for my grandchildren and for my listeners' children and grandchildren. And I would want to run for another term on the council. I might would want to run for reelection, but there's no political calculation here.
You're not running for mayor.
No, this is all about Jacksonville to me. I feel like I'm protecting my hometown, the hometown that I love, my family's loved, and my family before me has loved.
Okay. And in keeping with that sentiment, let me ask you about another important issue that you're involved with. You're chairing the new Special Committee on Resiliency. The Jacksonville City Council is now taking this issue up in a serious way. For the first time, Jacksonville has been criticized for being much slower than other major Florida cities to get serious about looking at resiliency issues and adaptation of mitigation efforts to deal with the impacts of climate change and rising waters. What will this resiliency committee do? What are your biggest priorities when this work begins in January?
Well, the first meeting we'll have a speaker from the Corps of Engineers, Glenn Landers, and he has a good way of explaining what the consequences are if we do nothing right now, or if we, the mayor had a resiliency plan that he's put forth, mm-hmm. and I think he and the people that were involved in it, Bill Killingsworth and some others, did an outstanding job. So the first meeting will be devoted to Glenn Landers to kind of set the plate as to what happens if we don't do anything. The second meeting will be devoted to the mayor's plan and what they have, what policies that they are pushing for. I would like to see our committee take any of those policies that have not been executed or codified and codify them after maybe 6 months of our first meetings. I think this commission or committee should go probably for year to year to year. This is a short-term issue and a long-term issue. But there's a lot of things that can be done in the short term. But the idea, though, is Ben Franklin one time said, a stitch in time is worth nine, okay? So it's, in other words, you know, you put one stitch in, you save nine stitches later. Mm. if we don't do anything now, the cost of addressing this issue is just going to get more and more expensive. And there's a lot of things the city can do, a lot of things individual people can do as well.
What are some easy things? Nothing about this is truly easy, but what are some immediate things you think the city should be doing with regard to resiliency?
Well, I think right now we should be looking at what the mayor's office has already put forth and codifying as much of that as we possibly can. But it'll entail land use policy decisions that will change the way in the places that we build and the height mm-hmm. that we build. One thing that's interesting, this is not a, let's just say I want to find out, like the JEA building that's going to be built downtown. I'm not trying to go back to JEA, but the JEA building, I understand this may not be true, but I understand it's being built to Catastrophic 3 hurricane standards. Mm-hmm. I think it should be built to Catastrophic Hurricane 5, Category 5 hurricane standards, because that is the one building that you want to make sure is high and dry if we have a bad storm. Mm. So I don't think it would cost that much more money to take it to a hurricane.
So you're talking about
five. Land
use changes, building code changes.
Building higher.
So this would be a wholesale rejiggering of the way we build out a city and approve new developments, potentially?
We'll still be able to build in some of the same places. But one thing the mayor's office did that I recommended or the resiliency committee that he commissioned put together, and that was that in a 100-year floodplain, you would have to, instead of building 1 foot higher than we do now, you'd build 2 foot up higher than we would be. So that would be a code change. I don't know whether that's been implemented or not, but I think he did. I think that was a great recommendation by that team.
And lots of other things to come.
I tell you what's interesting. Planting trees is a great defense against resiliency.
Yeah.
Because they soak up the water, and they also, the leaves capture water that ordinarily would have gone to the mm-hmm. ground and evaporate.
That's just one example. We'll have to leave it there. Have another conversation about this.
Would love to.
Sometime soon. But he's Jacksonville City Councilman at Large, Matt Carlucci, joining us this morning. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Still to come, Cole Pepper as Foles gets benched and Minshew takes the field. Didn't result in a win, though, for the Jaguars. But up next, a holiday tradition returns, the 17th annual Gingerbread Extravaganza. We'll be right back.
At Coker Law, when it comes to your health, there's no room for medical mistakes. You rely on your doctors to make informed decisions about your care. Unexpected shouldn't mean unaccountable. Coker Law is dedicated to getting you answers. CokerLaw.com. Edible Northeast Florida magazine tells the story of local food. On stands for November and December is the celebration issue, available at restaurants, stores, markets, and eateries throughout Northeast Florida. More at edibleneflorida.com.
Join WJCT as we celebrate 20 years of America's Test Kitchen. To mark this occasion, WJCT is hosting an America's Test Kitchen recipe contest on Instagram. Calling all cooks, chefs, and foodies, pick your favorite America's Test Kitchen recipe, cook it, capture a pic of your dish, and share it to your Instagram page using hashtag WJCTTestKitchen. Visit WJCT.org/TestKitchen for more information.
Welcome back. The 17th annual Gingerbread Extravaganza is sure to enthrall visitors of all ages. You can come and ooh and ah over more than four dozen delectable gingerbread creations built by both amateurs and professionals from across this area. The Jacksonville Historical Society hosts this beloved holiday tradition every year. Alan Bliss heads up the Historical Society, and he joins us now. Hey, Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for having us here.
It's great to have you. And this is such a neat thing because it's an opportunity for people to get in the holiday spirit and also learn about the work of the Historical Society, which does amazing things for this city. What can we see when we come out to check out the gingerbread show this year?
Well, Melissa, this year we have a bumper crop of creations. These are 85% edible gingerbread houses. Mm. The theme is tied around Christmas or Jacksonville history, and people who come out to look at the creations will see recreations, gingerbread replicas of many familiar Jacksonville landmark buildings. Everyone is crafted by a volunteer builder. Excuse me. And as you say, this has become a Jacksonville tradition that's beloved by the people who come to look and the people who participate and build.
Can you take any of them home? Do people ever ask you that?
We do ask people when they drop off their creations if they want them back or if they're donating them to be given away or raffled at the end. And so, yes, there are some that you can put in a request for if there are some that
you
appeal
to you.
You
can raffle them off. Yeah. This is a real art form, and at this time of year, people really let their creativity run wild. I once bought one of those little gingerbread making kits at the store. My kids and I tried to make one. It didn't come out so well. It's a lot harder than it looks to make them look as beautiful as they do.
Well, you know, that's true, but we have creations that reach really every level on the whole spectrum of skill and sophistication. So there are some pretty basic houses that are built by those store-bought kits, as you put it, and then we have builders who have been doing it for years who just accomplish amazing things with gingerbread. So you'll see the whole spectrum.
And when people come out, they can also take part in some other fun stuff. You've got a scavenger hunt, a holiday shop. And more importantly, people can learn about the Jacksonville Historical Society. Now, you're located in the old St. Andrew's Church, right next to the baseball grounds downtown. Tell us a little bit more about the work of the Society.
Well, education is at the center of our mission. We do public programmings. We have at least one monthly speaker series event, sometimes more, that focus on a topic of history with a particular Jacksonville hook. We do a lot in the way of educating people through public programs, through public lectures. I do a lot of public speaking before civic groups and other organizations in Jacksonville, always with a Jacksonville topic. I collaborate with teachers in the Duval County Public School System on helping with ways that you can teach U.S. history with a Jacksonville connection. We have a library of books that are devoted exclusively to the history of Jacksonville and Duval County, a number of rare items. Our archives continue to grow. Your listeners may recall that the Jacksonville Historical Society collaborated just this year with the public library on preserving the photo collection and story archive of the Florida Times Union.
So important.
And irreplaceable collection.
Yeah. And there was a lot of concern that it could be lost. So luckily you stepped in to save that that incredible archive of local history that was in the pages of the newspaper.
It was a big rescue, but we were absolutely not going to let that collection be lost, and we were not going to let it leave Jacksonville either, which was another one of the possibilities.
Right. Okay, so with all of that said, the Big Gingerbread Bash, which goes all month long, kicks off this Wednesday. That's the first day people can come out, correct?
We start Wednesday the 4th. We're open every week from Wednesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 5. We're open every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5. And we're open two Sundays, Sunday the 15th and the 22nd from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. We also have tours of the historic Merrill House right next door. They are included in the admission. Those tours leave on the half hour, each hour and half hour. And the Merrill House and the St. Andrew's Church, as you said, are on A. Philip Randolph Boulevard. We're right across the street from the main entrance to the ViStar Veterans Memorial
That's
Arena,
right
next to the baseball grounds, as you said. Parking is free in the lot out back behind the Merrill House, and there's plenty of access.
And this is a free tour, right?
The tour is
there
included.
A ticket? Okay.
The tour is included in the admission to the Gingerbread Extravaganza.
Okay. And what's in the Merrill House, by the way?
The Merrill House is an 1870s vintage Victorian-style house that's been completely furnished in the style of an upper-middle-class Jacksonville family right about the time of the Great Fire, 1901. So there have been artifacts, mementos, documents, furnishings that are authentic and legitimate right to the time period of just after the turn of the century. It's a glimpse into what it was like to be a person living in Jacksonville.
100 years ago or so.
A little over 100 years ago. And this was the historic home of the Merrill family, most noted for their connection with Merrill Shipbuilding, one of Jacksonville's largest ever industrial employers.
If you drive down Merrill Road, that may have been named after that family. So I got to ask you one last question. Do you ever sneak a taste of any of these gingerbread houses? Do you ever break off a little piece when no one's looking? Come on, you can tell me. No one else is listening. It's just us.
Everyone cover their ears. No, I've never been tempted to do that. But I can tell you the smell of the gingerbread really brings the whole event home to you. And we're so close here in Studio 5, Melissa, you can almost smell the gingerbread from here.
I'll tell you what, I can't wait to come check it out and bring my kids. This is a great family event. Come on out and visit this month, the 17th Annual Gingerbread Extravaganza, hosted by the Jacksonville Historical Society. JacksHistory.org for more information. And he is CEO Alan Bliss. Thank you so much. Have fun.
Thanks to you, Melissa.
All right, in a moment, oh, the drama. Culpepper joins us with more about Foles, Minshew, and the Jaguars game from yesterday. Did you watch? Were you there? We'll be right back.
Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings is one of Florida's best-loved writers. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit the front porch in Alachua County where the Yearling and Cross Creek were written. We'll discuss the St. Augustine Yacht Club and the Winter Park Advocate African-American newspaper. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, actor David Harbour from the Netflix series Stranger Things. He plays the skeptical police chief of a sleepy town besieged by supernatural events.
I know the worst thing that's ever happened here was when an owl attacked Eleanor Gillespie's head because it thought that her hair was a nest.
And we remember New Yorker cartoonist Gayon Wilson, who died recently. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Next year's U.S. Census will be the first conducted mostly online to make sure that doesn't lead to an undercount of communities of color. One organization in Georgia is setting up free Wi-Fi hotspots.
We have an opportunity to be counted and to show up. And if we don't, then we're losing money. We're also losing power in terms of influence and representation.
I'm Ari Shapiro. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The UK is getting ready to vote. At stake, its place in Europe. What has Brexit-bound Britain got to do with 50 shades of grey?
It's all about domination and submission. And if we're being dominated, that is humiliation and submission.
Acclaimed Irish writer Fintan O'Toole on what might end years of political pain. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Culpepper Sports Wrap-Up is brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
Welcome back. Nick Foles is dramatically benched at halftime. What does this mean for the Jaguars' future? Drama in the second half of the Jaguars' game against the Buccaneers. Culpepper, as ever, has some thoughts. My gosh, Cole, this was one for the books.
You know, I think a lot of folks were expecting that with the Jaguars coming off three straight games against division opponents where they looked just awful, getting back home at TIAA Bank Field for the first time since before Halloween, that this would be a chance to get a little bit healthy, maybe, you know, be competitive, maybe beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are not exactly world beaters this year. Instead, we saw one of the worst first halves you'll ever see. At halftime, the Jaguars trailed 25-0. Nick Foles had directed drives that ended in three turnovers, and the rest were three and outs. Not good. So at halftime, Doug Marrone made the decision to bench Foles and insert Gardner Minshew into the lineup. Minshew provided a little bit of a spark. Jaguars still lost 28-11. I do know, after reaching out to folks on social media, there were at least dozens that I heard from who were going to go home at the beginning of the third quarter if they didn't put Gardner Minshew in. They were just done. Now, I will also say it's not all about the quarterback. There are other issues here as well. But things are starting to unravel at the stadium. After the game, as we walked into the locker room for the post-game interviews, two Jaguars, Unique Ngakoue and Brandon Linder, were being separated by Calais Campbell in a heated argument. Things going from bad to worse with this team. They still have four more games to go. Not surprising there are fingers being pointed and frustrations boiling over now. Melissa, at one point this team was 4-4. Now they have to play out the string in December. They can use all the cliches that we've heard from losing teams in the past years. In fact, we've heard these in a lot of past years. And they're professionals and they're playing for pride. They want to show the coaches that they don't let adversity affect their play. And all that might be true. But right now, I don't think anybody in Jacksonville wants to hear that stuff. Again, I think we're going to see major changes coming later this month and not just on the roster, by the way.
About the roster? Well, who's going to start the next game?
In the short term, Doug Marrone saying he wasn't ready to name a starter next week, but I will be more than shocked if it's Nick Foles. I don't know how you can go back to him at this point. The Jaguars have a huge investment in Nick Foles, $50 million guaranteed. And I think for now,
that seems like a waste of $50 million, frankly.
It sure does. And Foles has not been anywhere near what has been expected, either in terms of, you know, obviously his ability to stay on the field, the injuries, which he does have an injury history, but he hasn't played well. If you go back to the second drive in Indianapolis a couple of weeks ago, he looked good since then. He's looked like a guy completely out of sorts. And
can Minshew rise to the occasion?
You know, it's a huge question. It's not like he's going to save the season. He may save interest in the season. And I think what you're going to see now going forward is, because Nick Foles is going to be on this roster next year, barring a trade, and that's not going to be easy to do, to trade a guy with that kind of salary number. But I think you're going to see a quarterback competition. A lot of times what a lot of general managers and personnel people do is that they'll look at the different positions and they'll decide, we're going to spend this much on this position. So right now, they do not have a big investment in Gardner Minshew. Six-round picks don't get big contracts. They have a big investment in Nick Foles. So whether it's whether one of them is starting and the other one's backing up doesn't really matter in a lot of ways. What matters is what happens once you decide to make a move. at some point. So I think you're going to have a quarterback competition in the offseason. Who knows how that's going to play out, and who knows who's going to be making the call on how that plays out. Because, again, we could see new coaching, new front office, could be major changes coming later this month.
That is almost for sure. Okay, last but not least, let's talk about some college football news and notes from the weekend.
Well, Florida knocked off Florida State in that rivalry game, giving the Gators their 10th win of the season. Dan Mullen's team can win 11 if they win their bowl game. We don't know where that will be yet. We'll know for a few weeks. Meanwhile, FSU will also go to a bowl game, but now they have to find a head coach. We've heard Mark Stoops, the Kentucky head coach, is one candidate. Bob Stoops, his brother, the former Oklahoma coach, also has been mentioned. We'll see how it all plays out there. And Georgia knocked off Georgia Tech to keep their national title hopes alive. They'll play LSU in the SEC championship game on Saturday in Atlanta. If they win that, they're in the college football playoff. They'll be one of four teams who has a chance to win the national championship.
Okay, and Cole says there is one local high school team still alive in the hunt for a state title. Just one.
And what a story it is. Bulls, under first-year head coach Matt Tobin, lost their opener this year to University Christian. They haven't lost since. They'll take on Booker T. Washington out of Miami a week from Wednesday in Daytona for the state title.
Go Bulls. Bring home that title. And always listen every Monday morning as Cole stops by Studio 5 for some sports news and notes. You can catch him on TV every night on Channel 4, our news partner. Follow him on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. Our station news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is digital editor. Keep those emails coming. We value your feedback. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And tomorrow, don't miss our latest conversation with Carrie Stewart of JEA. That's tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks so much for being with us today. And if you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, just keep listening for some great music, part of our after-hours block of music programming. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.